Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other. And we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast.
How does Vinland Saga integrate religion into its story? We're going to be asking that question and more on today's episode of Systematic Geekology. We are the priests to the geeks. I'm your host, Christian Ashley of Systematic Geekology, joined today by, of course, the greatest Viking warrior ever known to man. The one to whom the epic sagas are written to, TJ Blackwell. How's it going, TJ?
Excellent. Thank you for asking. I'm so good.
I'm glad to hear that, man. Well, TJ, my friend, what have you been geeking out on recently?
You're not going to like the answer.
I'm used to that by now.
No, I'm kidding. Some friends recently started a modded Minecraft server.
Okay.
So that's been a really good time. Also, I started reading a manga called Lands of the Lustrous. Pretty interesting.
How is that?
Yeah, so I'm on chapter 3. Like, I started like 20 minutes ago. It's pretty interesting.
Okay, it's a brand new stuff you're geeking out on. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
I just finished, people in the States would know it better as G-Force or Battle of the Planets, but in Japan, it's Gatchaman. I have really enjoyed it. I had seen a couple of the old cartoons back in the day, but I knew next to nothing about it, so I'd gotten through all of it. It's really fun. Good story. So that's that. It's time for us to get into the topic proper.
Oh, isn't G-Force like guinea pigs?
That's a very separate thing. Created in another way. Yeah. This is the old 70s show based around birds. Oh. So on today's episode, continuing on in our religion series, we're covering the religious aspects of the manga and anime known as Vinland Saga. We've talked about it before on the show a couple times. We haven't done a full episode on it before, just mostly in our What's New and something like that. But today we're going to be focusing on its religion because it shows up in many surprising ways in the show and the manga. I am anime only. TJ has caught up to the manga as is present. It's very close to ending as I understand it. So I'm interested to see where things go. I don't mind spoilers, but if you do, we'll try and let you know when those will pop up so that you can avoid them if you are just caught up to the anime, or if you're just curious at all. So, TJ, how would you explain what Vinland Saga is?
Vinland Saga is a historical fantasy manga. Light, very light fantasy. Very slight exaggerations. Everything that happens in Vinland Saga could have happened in real life. We just don't have records that accurate. I believe someone like Thorkel could have lived.
I don't want to live in a world without Thorkel.
Exactly. But it is the story of real-life Icelandic adventurer Thorfinn Karlsefni finding Vinland, which is Greenland, and living there, trying to move there. In real life, he actually converts to Christianity, not to jump the gun or anything.
yes.
But we haven't gotten there yet in the manga. It's kind of, I wonder if they're editing
it. Yeah, okay. I'm surprised that they would do that, considering how much it's shown up before. Because he's definitely shown an interest in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, this is based off of old Icelandic epics of the day, where they would revolve around a hero or a person and explain the actual history around it in verse, in song, in poetry, where talking about their exploits, where they started from, how they ended up, And Thorfinn was one of the protagonists, as TJ said, of one of these epics, of these sagas. And the show obviously takes some liberties with it, makes it a little more anime. There's some feats of strength in there that are a bit beyond what human beings are capable of, but it looks good, so who cares? It's the story of him growing up in Iceland, far away from the other Scandinavian Viking tribes. His family lives fairly peaceful until the day when his father is called to war. He used to be an old veteran who slaughtered numerous people, had kind of had a change of heart, decided to just do the farming life. Thorfinn smuggles aboard. They end up getting betrayed. He watches his father murdered by a mercenary known as Askeladd, who he swears to kill, joining Askeladd's band, going on this epic revenge quest while partnering around with the very people who murdered his father. And it's his journey to figure out, hey, is revenge worth it? What am I supposed to do? What does it mean to love people? What is this God thing about? How do you rule? How do you cause peace? There's a ton of really good stuff in here, but we're not going to cover all that just yet. So, TJ, we brought it up a couple of times. How does religion itself factor into Vinland Saga?
So, I'm not sure when this shows up in the anime, because I've only watched like 2 episodes of the anime. I'm a big reader, not a big watcher. One of the kings is Christian, and it kind of shows up, and I feel bad, because it's Canute, right? Canute is the Christian.
Canute, yeah.
But it's relevant. It stays. I feel like I really did miss it pretty handily on my first go through. I was just like, oh, Christianity, that's cool. Vikings. But it's there. It's significant. It plays a big role in how Thorfinn starts to see things. At one point, I'm pretty sure he questions like, oh, was my dad Christian? Is that why he was? No, he wasn't.
No.
But it's a huge factor, and this takes place in like at that 1000 AD, like,
yes,
I think 1020 to 980, something like that. So it's a big thing in Europe at this point, that it, you know, spread of Christianity, and it's there, it's relevant, it's part of their real life is murder, kill, steal, Christian.
Yeah, and not just Christianity. The Norse religion is brought up multiple times over. Every warrior dreams of going to Valhalla one day, and they'll do that by being on the battlefield, dying in battle, slaying enough opponents, making a name for themselves. It goes into religious practices there. We've got the clash, obviously, between those two ideals and religions, you know, with Jesus Christ being seen as weak by some of the Nordic figures because, you know, he willingly died on the cross instead of dying in battle. And in some people understanding, no, that's actually kind of metal what he did, you know, dying on the cross for the sins of the world in a way that no one else could. And there's a clash there of ideals and ideologies. Lots of real fun stuff. We're going to focus on both of those. There's a couple people in the show that are kind of natheists, and, you know, they may say God is real, but they really don't want to follow him, or he's not worthy of worship. But for the most part, you're kind of split between those two factions. Right here, as you know, the Vikings of Scandinavia are invading England and France and several other areas around the world. I think we actually go to the Baltics area of the world later on in the manga, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the Baltics. Yeah,
this is Baltic Sea. Okay. Yeah, this spans all across Europe at this point in history. This is before William the Conqueror in 1066 takes control from Normandy, from the Norman lands. Just a time of upheaval in England where Vikings control part of it. They're raiding other monasteries and stuff like that. It's a very terrible time to live in, but a very interesting story. Anything else you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
Fair enough. All right. So with that, TJ, out of the plenty of characters in the show who are religious in some way, shape, or form, which one do you find the most compelling?
Probably Thorfinn. And I know that's like easy to say. But I don't know, we get the most out of Thorfinn. We see his journey from extremely angry 13-year-old Viking child to, you know, Christian, basically. Like,
yes,
diving into it headfirst and accepting the tenets of the faith, more or less. Like, we're there. We're just not to the point in the manga where he's like, yeah, I'm Christian. But mm-hmm. he is, really.
It's definitely affected his ideology a lot and how he turned for this and a huge spoilers, by the way, but this person focused on revenge. That's the only thing that mattered in his life. And yet he's helped by those Christians one time in that village. He tries to save them, but they end up dying when the Vikings raid, their mercenary group raids them. And then you have him at the farm giving up his revenge and trying to become this new person and listening to the Bible being read by Snake to Sverner, Sverkin, what's your name? Sverker. And then wondering, marveling at this idea of loving your enemies. What does that mean? Yeah. Thorfinn is a very fascinating figure to look at, and from where he started as this innocent kid who has, you know, as every kid does growing up, is like, I'm going to be a soldier. I'm going to fight, not knowing the true realities of the world. And then experiencing it firsthand, giving himself into revenge. And then when that revenge finally happens, he's left with nothing. Like, what am I supposed to do now? So, yeah, you can say it's basic all you want, but I agree with you. He's a good choice.
Yeah. I mean, he is the main character.
Yeah.
Canute's also compelling.
Yes. Canute, we'll get to Canute.
No, we'll wait.
Yeah, he's Canute is a very fascinating figure, and it takes a lot from history, this story, like, as a basis. And Canute's wrestling with his faith is a huge part of his rise to king. It starts off as this nobody prince, probably not the effeminate figure we see in the show, but becoming into more of what would be a Viking Christian king in many respects of England and of Denmark. But my actual answer to this is kind of a weird one, because I'm not exactly sure where he lands, but it's going to be Snake. And as we see in season two, he's the leader of this group of people that are in charge of security of the farm that Thorfinn has been made a slave at. And he just seems to be this muscle-bound dude who doesn't really think too much. But then you start seeing scenes of him reading a Greek Bible to one of the masters there, who is a Christian himself, but Snake doesn't believe in any of it. But yet he knows Greek enough to speak it fluently and read the Bible and understand what's going on. His opinion is that he loves the Old Testament more than the New Testament because it's more fighting and death.
It's real.
But yeah, it's that weird, because you get a sense that he's lying when he says that he doesn't care what it says, because it's obviously affected him. And there's clues hidden in there that he's more than he says. He's got a sword that has no business being up there. It's kind of a Byzantine or Eastern Roman Empire kind of weapon. So it makes sense why he would know Greek, probably working as a mercenary there, which a lot of Norsemen actually did. True fact of history. So I think he hasn't made a decision one way or the other, but I find him compelling. And like this warrior who is such an intellectual in that respect, and like reflecting on things that other warriors wouldn't care about.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the Greek way.
With that, hey, you brought him up earlier. We have Thorfinn's father, Thors, who, as you said, never once converts to Christianity, yet holds some ideals very close to some of the tenets of Christianity. In his belief, not really of turning the other cheek so much, it's like more of a technical pacifism, and where he will do like everything within his power to avoid fighting. He will save a slave's life at the cost of giving the slave master's owner some goats, knowing that slave himself is going to die, just because he doesn't want that slave to suffer anymore. And he'll do everything not to fight, but when push comes to shove, he's still going to go out. He still goes out in a blaze of glory against Askeladd, trying to save the lives of his crew to make sure they can go back home. So what can we learn from his philosophy and from his own life of turning away from his many past sins as a warrior?
Yeah, so by the time that I had read Vinland Saga, I already lived like this. So I didn't personally learn a lot from Thor's, but it was great to see like real representation of, I'm not going to cause a problem. I'm going to do what I can to help people. And unless I'm forced to, I'm not going to, you know, ruin someone's day or, you know, kill somebody. Same thing.
Yeah.
You know, 21st century, it's the same thing. So it's great. It actually, this has done a lot for people I know to see Thor's and Thorfinn's journey. So I don't know. It's one of the reasons I love this story. And Thor's is just so cool.
Oh, yes.
He's just so cool.
Absolutely. And you see the way like he affects other characters around him, like Thorkell, who is like the absolute berserker. Like, I live to fight. That is why I am here on this earth. Valhalla will be mine one day. And yet, when we have that flashback of Thor's leaving behind with his wife, Ylva, just so he doesn't have to fight anymore. And Thorkell is the one person who could stop him. And he's so confused by this idea of not fighting other people, of wishing peace. And the dichotomy between the two of them is just breathtaking, as like looking at the two of them as characters.
Mm-hmm. I don't really think Thorkell could have stopped Thor's.
Oh, yeah. That's once again, like Thor's is a technical pacifist. What I mean by that is that he will do everything in his power to promote peace. But if push comes to shove, he's able to back up the protection of that peace by fighting, because he has the capability to do so. And I find it interesting is that when you look at the church's history, there's some people who went way too far, and like pacifism always, you know, like we can never lift up a hand in anger. We can never fight back. There's no such thing as self-defense. It's better that we just die rather than, you know, causing this. And you have other Christians. So what does Jesus mean when he said to love your neighbor? Does that mean I can never kill someone in war? Does that mean self-defense doesn't exist? Or does that mean that turning the other cheek is to take the initial blow, but then we fight back, you know, to protect life, to preserve life? How do we all work with that? What are your thoughts on this?
I really appreciate his stance on pacifism. My stance, I think there is a time and place for violence.
Mm-hmm.
Killing? Not necessarily.
Okay.
I think generally we can avoid that. But I don't know. We live in a pretty busy and complicated world.
I'll agree with that.
I don't know if I believe in a just war.
Okay. So you would disagree with Augustine?
Most of the time.
As has been well documented elsewhere. So I do believe in just war. I do believe Christians can participate in war in order to preserve life. It sounds like a contradiction at first, but depending on the war being fought, there are ways to preserve life even at the cost of ending other lives. I mean, might as well throw Godwin's law out there. Do we want to live in a world where no one fought back against the rise of Nazism? Do we want to live in a world where they just let their ideologies be free? Do we want to live in a world that didn't, you know, resist Mao Zedong and his policies that led to the deaths of countless millions just in his own country, let alone his foreign policy? Like, there's a time and a place for it. And that's one thing Christians should always be aware of, is like, especially those in the military, am I fighting a just war? Am I fighting for people who just want to make money off of this and profit off of this? Or are we actually protecting people? Are we in our own citizens? And I'm of the belief that even amongst the disciples, Jesus was fine with this, because as we see in scripture, they had weapons in his presence. Now, Peter obviously misuses the weapon when they try to take Jesus away and cuts off poor Malchus's ear. And that's what Jesus reprimands him for. He doesn't reprimand him for having the weapon. He reprimands him for how he conducted himself and for trying to stop what should have happened. So, and of course, throughout Israel's history, there are plenty of times when they had to fight back against Midianite raiders or Amalekite raiders, or the Aramaeans were coming in, or the Egyptians were coming in, or the Assyrians or the Babylonians. Those were just wars of self-defense. But then you also have moments where you have David going out and slaughtering a bunch of people, taking over their land. Is that a just war? It is for the sake of security, but is it the same case for loving those people as God loves us? Not so much. So it's all over the place. There's plenty of people who will argue either way. I agree with Thor's to the extent of do everything, use every option you have available before you start to fight. But when you start to fight, you better be able to back it up. Otherwise, your pacifism is kind of useless.
Yeah. He did spend a lot of years killing people to get to that point.
Yes.
So,
and that's what it took for him. And that's an important part of people's journeys, is when did they learn the lesson?
Yeah.
Some people already have the lesson down pat, and they don't need to go through the horrors of war to figure that out. Some people need to find it out in the midst of it. That's obviously not good. They had to wait that long, that they hurt a lot of people along the way, but it's better that they learned a lesson.
Yeah.
See? Anything else for Thor's?
I don't know. We got so little from Thor's, and I really wish we got like a prequel for like at least a little bit more of Thor's. It'd be so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd actually like to see like the build up to what was the breaking point exactly.
Yeah.
Like, after all these battles, what does it mean? Like, we see in flashback him coming to that realization, but like, what led up to that?
Yeah, I gotta know.
Oh yeah,
I need more Viking manga.
Hey, that's a good one. And for the most part, this is fairly historically accurate as things are concerned. And one thing that is also, for the most part, historically accurate is the character of Canute. Now, we see at this point in time, Askeladd's band of mercenaries, Thorfinn alongside him, are hired to take care of him and watch him as he's going to make his way to his father, Sven, Swain, something like that, something Nordic thereabouts. And part of Canute's characterization is that he's a very, what's the word I'm looking for here? Passive, very timid kind of person who has converted to Christianity thanks to, I believe his name is Ragnar, is one of those like top guys looking out for him, and is essentially being coddled by him. And for a Viking, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So they see the Christianity part of him as being weak. They see that as like, oh, you're just following that religion of that guy who just willingly put himself to die. What kind of use are you in a battlefield? Not much. But we see Canute through his journey, kind of wondering, why can't we bring paradise to earth? Why all this fighting? Why do we have to have people shed their blood? Isn't the good thing that we reach God, we attain that paradise? But he looks around and he sees, oh, that's impossible. And he comes to this, in my opinion, very flawed, but he comes to the interpretation that since it is impossible for paradise to be brought into this world by God, in his opinion, therefore, he needs to make paradise on earth, and he will do whatever it takes to bring it. So what are your thoughts on it?
Do you love systematic ecology as much as I do? Of course you do. So why don't you hop on over to the Systematic Ecology shop and get yourself some merch. We have clothing like hats, extra soft t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies. We even have glassware and mugs. One of my favorite coffee mugs that I use every morning is a coffee mug that has on it, share the faith, share the geek. Yeah, I get my geek on first thing every morning thinking of systematic ecology. And I know you need to hop over there and get you some merch, represent us out in the wild, out in the public, and let people know that you too like to share the faith and share the geek.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Canute. He was born and raised a very pretty man in you know, Iceland, which is not a great thing to be. And a prince and soft and not willing to fight. So like, I get it, sympathetic, but I don't understand how he made the theological leap there.
It is quite the leap.
Like, there's not as much like available thinking to be read at that point. So like, you're going to come up with your own crazy ideas, but man, I don't know about that one.
Yeah. I think it's a result of multiple factors in that I don't think he has a Bible of his own. He's reliant on being taught by, you know, priests and monks who were hoarding it for themselves. Some of them were hoarding, not all were. Let me put that blanket statement out of there. And it doesn't help that he's raised in part of a Viking culture that would have looked down on Christianity, so he wouldn't have had as much access to scripture and seeing all the flaws in his line of thinking. But based on the information presented to him, he hears of paradise. He hears of Jesus' sacrifice, of wanting to bring mankind back to himself and bring peace to the world. And yet all he sees around him is war and devastation, living in England under the control of his Viking father. And he realizes, well, their way clearly isn't working. And the way the church is handling things clearly isn't working. So what if I did something different? What if I decided to become that ultimate authority, that dictator king who brings paradise to earth? Yeah, there's a huge leap of logic there, but I get it.
Yeah. Like, if I was in that situation, maybe. It's just really hard to put myself in that situation.
And it doesn't help, too, that he kind of has Askeladd as like that serpent in his ear to an extent, kind of pushing him forward towards some of these ideals. Askeladd doesn't come up with like the paradise idea, but he sees as a master manipulator what his buttons are, and he's doing everything. Askeladd's big thing is, hey, by the way, he's a descendant of King Arthur, which if you read your ancient legends, the story originates from Wales. So he's trying to keep the Welsh out of the Vikings' hands. He's trying to keep it out of the British hands. So he's doing everything in his power just to make sure they're fighting between each other, and Wales is kept safe. So if he needs to be that serpent in the ear talking to a young kid who knows nothing about nothing, nothing about politicking, he'll do what it takes.
Yeah.
So it doesn't help that he's a factor here. Go ahead.
Yeah. I really wish he wouldn't have tried so hard to protect Wales or England.
Yep. So I think Canute is one of my favorite characters from the show in that how does he wrestle with these ideas? What does he do? And then we see in the second season, and I have no clue what happens with him later on, but him expanding his influence, his father is dead, he's king now, and there's speculation in actual history, there's like speculation he may have had his brother murdered. In the show, it's like canon that happens. So like his ends justify the means kind of mentality has gotten him to the point of, if I'm doing it, it's just because my ultimate goal is to bring salvation and paradise on earth. And yet that confrontation he has with Thorfinn in the second season of their clashing ideologies gets him to back down because he's not that far gone yet. Ultimately, he is willing to listen to reason. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's so crazy to see a king, a powerful king, meets for the second time a kid. And having seen how much this incredibly violent, don't want to put that out there again, unbelievably violent young teenager turn into such a peaceful and loving person that it changes his mind on what he
and that scene also. Yeah, those episodes also show a lot of Thorfinn's growth, too, in that he essentially turned the cheek 80 to 100 times or however many times he had to get hit so that he could talk peace. That didn't really hit me until now. It's like, oh, he's kind of literally doing that.
Yeah, he literally 100 times. He's like, he just shows up. He's like, I want to talk to Canute or whatever. And they're like, oh, we have a score to settle. Thorfinn's like, okay, get to settling. I'm right here.
Yep. And he takes it like a champ.
And he absolutely could have killed everybody there. One at a time. But could have. And he does nothing.
Yeah. But before that scene, for Thorfinn specifically, we do see him have the kind of like this dream vision of Valhalla. And it's remarkably different than most other takes. Most of the takes you'll see from actual mythology is like, hey, you know, we're going to fight outside. But everyone, after that's done, we're all bros. We're just going to eat and feast and be merry, drink and be merry. And we'll do it the next day. But for Thorfinn, his vision of Valhalla is this cesspool of blood and guts and Vikings continually murdering one another, them in pain and misery from all the death and devastation until there's really no one left. And then it starts over again in this endless war of depravity. So for those not in the know, TJ, can you tell them what Valhalla is? And why does Thorfinn see it so differently than other Norsemen?
So Valhalla is traditionally kind of like, it's not heaven, but it's kind of what they're shooting for in the same way that heaven is. Valhalla is the resting place of all the Vikings who die in battle, fighting for their cause, or just nobly. If you've never seen anything about Valhalla, there's some really cool, really fun stories about Valhalla, about, you know, like modern day Norse people, you know, the chef, you know, protecting his door from a robber and getting shot, and he dies and he's in Valhalla with his spatula. Cool stuff like that. But basically, it is just a giant drinking hall where all of the Vikings who died in battle are hanging out, being dudes. There's some more in there, like mythos wise, for the role that Valhalla plays in Ragnarok and stuff. That gets too deep. I don't remember it all. I knew most of it at one point.
Basically, it's like when Ragnarok does come, they'll come back for the final fight.
Yeah. Yeah. So Valhalla's really cool. Thorfinn sees Valhalla a lot more like most like evangelical Christians see hell. It's a lot closer. And it reflects his thoughts on war. Like his, you know, as someone who is suffering and not just buying into the life, he... For Valhalla, for him, is filled with the people that he has killed. And it's pretty terrifying, actually. Sometimes, every once in a while, I forget about this, and then someone reminds me, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah, he's like, Askeladd is there, and he's convincing Thorfinn, helping Thorfinn progress in his ways of pacifism, Christianity. And Thorfinn has to like climb the skeletons of the people that he's killed to escape Valhalla.
Yes. such a great visual metaphor for the turmoil in his heart. Yeah, I agree. It's so fascinating because, like, you get these cultural depictions of Valhalla, and I think, like, the first time I actually saw it outside of, like, you know, those Norse books for children, you would, you know, read about the mythology, was actually Marvel Ultimate Alliance, when you kind of get to that one level in Asgard. Oh, yeah. So it's like, oh, yeah, it's just he's drinking and partying and having fun. It's a good old time. And you forget about the fact that, yeah, early in the morning they were slaughtering and murdering each other just to prove who was the better warrior, just so they could forget all about it, let bygones be bygones, and eat and feast and drink. And you go, isn't that really a good afterlife? No. And Thorfinn kind of comes to that realization of he doesn't show the feasting part because it's not important to him. There's no reward worth living a life like that, where you have to pass over the corpses and climb over the corpses of the people you killed just so you can reach salvation or just so you can reach rest. It's like, no, why would I ever want that? And once again, he still hasn't made the commitment yet, you know, to turn away from who he used to be. But there's still that part of him says, I don't want to be that person. So what can I do about it right now, as limited as I can? What does that? What does peace mean to me? Well, it means not doing that ever again.
Yeah. Man, all what right. A good series.
Oh, absolutely. I adore this series. And I've heard it's still pretty good where you're at. I'm ready for that to be animated. But we'll get there when we get there. I don't even know if we have a third season confirmed yet.
I hope so. Not yes. That I'm necessarily going to watch it, but like it deserves it.
Oh, yes. So I kind of mentioned this earlier, part of my favorite character religiously, but as part of his job, Snake reads the Bible to his master Sverker, as he can read and interpret the Greek Bible that Sverker has. In so doing, Thorfinn overhears these verses kind of outside the house that they're in. The reason he's doing it is Sverker, obviously, he doesn't know Greek and he's kind of old and dying. And he's a committed Christian and he wants to hear the word, which is very rare for anyone outside of this time to have their own Bible. So he's a huge step above most people, even if it's in another language. And what we actually overhear, I believe it starts in Matthew 5:46, but it's from the section of scripture on the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:43-48, where Jesus is talking about, hey, you've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love these, who will love you? What reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. And Thorfinn overhears that loving your enemies thing, and that really gets the gears turning in his head. So, TJ, how does this play out in the story, and what are our thoughts on how effectively it's done?
Man. Ooh. So I think it only gets stronger from here. You know, most people who are familiar with the series are familiar with I Have No Enemies. That's where Thorfinn takes this and his forgiveness and willingness to love and stop suffering, which he will suffer greatly to do. And it only gets better as of chapter 209. It only gets better. And okay. This is like one, not even one, like 80, I think. I need to check.
Yes, there's plenty left to be animated.
Man.
Yeah, that line, I have no enemies. That is a baller line. Someone that easily, from another series, if you had a more pacifistic character, they could easily be annoying and, no, you should just be peaceful. Everyone should just get along and love each other and like, yeah, that's great, but you are actively causing a problem in the midst of this conflict while we're trying to stop the problem. Like, what are you doing? Thorfinn doesn't act like that. He has no enemies because he doesn't want to. And that takes a lot of effort because there are plenty of people out there he should hate. Like, Floki, as this point in the story, is still out there as a perpetrator of what caused his father to die. Like, he should still kind of hate Canute for certain reasons, too. But he turns that hate into something positive, a desire for peace, and not one where he himself is going to back down and never fight again, but one where, once again, like his dad, Thor's, he's going to exhaust every opportunity possible before he fights. And I love, like, he is deliberately placing himself outside of the building that this is being read in just so he can overhear it because he's fascinated by the concept. Who is this Jesus person who would say something as bold as love your enemy.
Also, Vinland Saga is really funny. Doesn't get talked about a lot, but Vinland Saga is like super, super funny.
Yes.
It gets looked over because it is also extremely deep and pretty violent. But man, it is hilarious. Leif Erikson, very notable character. Yeah. The reason that Thorfinn wants to go to Vinland, hilarious. They play him like an absolute crock.
His reunion with his sister is comedy gold because she thinks he's pretending to be her brother. And she just beats him up. And you know, like, he could easily kill her, but she just beats him up and he just takes it.
So good.
Oh, yeah. So, as a non-manga reader, like I said, I'm not caught up with the current story, but I know enough that, hey, it's called Vinland Saga. Guess what? They're going to reach Vinland. And for those of you who don't know your history, Leif Erikson is actually one of the first people from Europe that we can confirm went to the Americas. He landed in what is Newfoundland.
Yep.
Yeah. They knew about Greenland. Then he also went to Newfoundland. And they established a settlement there in history. Didn't last that long. And eventually they just kind of forgot that they ever went there outside of saga telling.
Yeah.
But in the story proper, yes, in Vinland Saga, we are reaching that point. We've actually gotten to the Americas, starting that settlement, right?
Mm-hmm. They okay. are starting Vinland, and well, we're a good bit past that now.
Okay. So as a result of that, they've met the Native American tribes in that area. So my question to you, TJ, is like, how are they portrayed? How does this whole thing develop? And are the Native American beliefs and religions ever brought up at all? Because I know nothing.
Yeah. So Lanu, not sure about the pronunciation, L-N-U, is they're the people who live on the land where they land, which is Lawrence the Meadows in Newfoundland currently. Not even sure what's there. Probably nothing. But we do get a little bit of the new religion. Not a lot. It's never like explicitly taught. A lot of what we get is trying to communicate with them, what they believe about the land, which is part of their belief, and how the white man, the Icelanders, are ruining it. And a lot of Thorfinn's energy is directed towards making peace with these people, trying to live gracefully on their land, obeying their rules, things like that. And he does talk to some of them about Christianity a couple of times, just because, you know, he's a good evangelist, but he's doing his duty. But he really tries his best to live in accordance with these people because Vinland is the place he wants to be because there's no war because they don't have iron.
Mm.
There's no war at first. There is now.
Yes.
Since we're spoiling it.
Of course. Yeah. It's tons I'm looking forward to. I know there's that Baltic Sea campaign. There's the Thorfinn finding his wife.
Oh, it's really good, actually. Super cool.
Oh, I'm ready to see that animated, but I'm going to be patient. There are other things I'm reading. I can't add one more thing to the list.
Yes, you can.
Not yet. So that's that. Do you have anything else you want to add for the religious side of things of Vinland Saga?
You'll definitely benefit a lot by rereading chapters in Vinland Saga because they're dense. Mm. You can miss a lot of stuff if you're going to read.
Yeah.
So you probably are able to get more out of it than I am on my first read. I'm probably going to reread it again one day.
Oh, a fine series to reread or to rewatch.
Yeah.
Either way.
I read lots of things. So,
yeah. That's it for that. Guys, if you want to get our special bonus question, we're going to ask each other, if we had to choose a character to convert to Christianity, who would it be and why? And I'm very curious to see what TJ has to say. So with that, thank you for listening. This was a really fun episode to do. never thought we'd see a Vinland Saga episode. Here we are. If you want to have us talk about the series proper, please let us know. We always listen to episode recommendations. We've added one to the religion episodes based on a listener recommendation. That'll be our, you know, Assassin's Creed and God of War episode, kind of splicing them together in that respect. TJ, do you have a recommendation for the audience?
That isn't Vinland Saga. They should probably read Vinland Saga. But
yeah,
man, I've been reading a lot of new stuff recently. Blue Exorcist was really good. Blue Exorcist is way better than I thought. It's not finished yet. It's really annoying. I really thought it would have been by now.
You know, health concerns and all that.
Man. Man.
Yeah. As I was writing the episode, I was remembering some other things I saw in a film that just came out not too long ago. The Northman. If you haven't seen The Northman, it bombed in theaters for reasons I will never understand. It is a spectacular film. Kind of similar themes propping up in The Northman, not necessarily Christianity-based, but more like, you know, revenge and all that mess. I love it. Great movie. Highly recommended. So, guys, thank you once again for listening to this episode. If you get a chance, just leave us a 5-star review on your podcasting platform of choice. Help us with the ratings. Help us to find more people. We're a growing show. We are reaching people all over the world, and that happens because of people like you, you know, reviewing us, letting us know what works, what doesn't work. We depend on you for that, so thank you. If you get a chance, just leave some episode topics for us, too. You can do that at systematicgeekology@gmail.com. And I think I'm announcing here first, we hit over 100 subscribers on YouTube. So as part of that, we're trying to host, with all the hosts available to do so, an episode where we answer your questions. So send us those questions, systematicgeekology@gmail.com, or you can go on our Facebook group, The Priests of the Geeks, say, hey, I would like this question added to the list. I will compile them together so that when we do have that episode with as many hosts as possible on at the same time, we will answer those. If you have a question for a specific host in mind, send us that too. We'll try and, if they're not able to come on, we'll try and get them to answer it so we can answer it for you on their behalf. Thank you for all that you do, but also especially thank you to our patrons, Russell Gentry, Justin Vaughn, Annette Knoll, and Jeannie Mattingly. Guys, you're the best. We love you. But remember, we are all the chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Make sure you follow us on Instagram, catch us live at events we are holding or attending, get updates when we post new episodes of the podcast, see our other favorite content that we lift up and support, as well as just see our beautiful faces and engage with us through messages. Maybe watch a reel and give us the feedback of what you think of the show.
Be sure to check out other Anazal Ministry Podcast AMP Network shows. You can see the whole network in a single feed if you're on Spotify, or you could go to Apple Podcasts and find the Anazal Ministries Network podcast, the AMP Network Network. Yeah, there's just a network on Apple. You can follow the whole thing. You'll get shows like The Homily, where Pastor Will goes through his homily messages. It's literally just Pastor Will sermons, guys. It's great. You also get access to the Whole Church podcast, where TJ and myself interview leaders from across different denominations and backgrounds to work towards a more full church unity. You can see My Seminary Life, where Brandon Knight discusses his experiences at seminary and then discusses seminary topics so anyone can have access to knowledge available to seminary students. You also can see Let Nothing Move You over there, where Christian Ashley goes through the Bible in a Bible study type fashion and explains the whole biblical narrative. I also have a show on there, The Dummy for Theology, where we discuss various theological topics in an attempt to show every side of the discussions, leaving you with more questions than answers. There's also The Bible After Hours, where the foul-mouthed preacher goes through the Bible from a more progressive view to challenge the status quo of the modern church. Finally, you can hear The Clydes, where Taylor and Elizabeth Clyde go through weekly discussions in a devotional conversational style method to help us all get closer to one another and to God.